Hey friends, welcome to the Rhythms for Life podcast, where each week we talk about four rhythms that help you reduce stress and anxiety and take charge of your emotional health. Rest, restore, connect, create.
These ideas come from Rebecca's best-selling book, Rhythms of Renewal, Trading Stress and Anxiety for a Life of Peace and Purpose. So grab your copy, invite your friends, and let's live in rhythm.
Welcome back. I'm Rebecca.
And I'm Gabe. And today we've got kind of some exciting news to share with you that we want to announce about some things we've been working on that take this conversation we're having through a podcast into real life, in-person experiences. And so that's exciting. That's coming up in just a minute. But today's episode, we're excited to introduce you to Bill and Lori Loki, who is Rebecca and I's personal counselors, and they've been the therapists that you and I have relied on so much in these last few years.
Yes, Lori's been my counselor for several years since we moved to Nashville. She was a part of my launch for the Rhythms for Life book. She gave that counseling lens, that clinical lens on Rest, Restore, Connect, Create when we did the launch back in October. And I know Bill and you, Gabe, have met for a while as well.
Yeah, and Bill's been the on-site clinical director for a decade. So he really understands how to help people go through these deep therapy programs. On-site's a place located here in the Nashville area. But I've just found him to be a gift because he helps me process some things that I've just not really been able to process before. And we're going to get into some of that. You know, we're going to go there a little bit. And I know Lori's had great experience in eating disorders and some other things that I know you as an audience are comfortable with therapy. But for a lot of people, you know, therapy was just kind of a thing you didn't talk about a lot. And so I'm excited today that we're talking about it. This is a part of our routine, our life, something we've employed for our family, for our marriage, for us individually. And so I'm excited to have a session almost on air talking about it. But what I'm most thrilled about, Rebecca, is that we've landed on something we've been dreaming about for a long time, and that's creating a retreat in September that's going to allow 60 people to come together in a beautiful location to really process this idea of Rhythms for Life together.
If you've been listening to this podcast from the beginning, we have been on this journey together. And I think it's really fun to have the opportunity to meet in person, to have several days away together, to go deep diving in some of these places that we've discussed.
Yeah, we want to create this setting that's horseback riding in big nature, Colorado, beautiful setting, you know, fly fishing if you're into fishing, if you're into trap shooting with guns, if you want to hike, exercise.
I'm into hiking.
Yeah, like there's so many things that we want to do where you get out and actually practice this idea of restoring and resting. But we also want to process connecting and creating. And so we're actually bringing together several people to kind of help us do this. And so Bill and Lori Loki, who you'll hear today, they're a couple that'll be with us that weekend. We've got Pete Richardson coming, who you've heard from on this podcast in season one, helping us understand better how to create and use that gift. And there'll be others announced as time goes forward. But it's just going to be a great time. 3 nights, 4 days, September 10th through 13th. And so we'll have more details coming out in the next few weeks that allow you to have a website to see more about this. But we wanted to let you know first to start planning on it, penciling those dates. And if they're interested, Rebecca, what should they do?
Just go to RebeccaLyons.com/retreat and let us know that you are interested and you want to be the first to know, because there are only 60 spots and we know they'll go quick. And if you want to be the first, just fill out that form and we will email you first and give you that opportunity. We're thrilled. Pete Richardson, if you remember, was on season one and he's a life coach. He takes people through these life planning retreats, and we are thrilled that he's joining us as well in the Create Rhythm, because a lot of you who have read Rhythms of Renewal, you get super jazzed about that last rhythm, Create. And it's all about your vocational health and the gifts and talents that you have to offer the world. So we cannot wait for this weekend with you guys. We want to make sure that you podcast listeners know about it first and respond at RebeccaLyons.com/retreat.
So for this episode, let's listen in now to our conversation with Bill and Lori Loki.
Bill and Lori, this is such a joy to have you guys here. Gabe and I have been very excited about this conversation in the ways that you have inspired us and equipped us the last couple of years. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
We are so glad to be here too. We just love you guys.
Well, the backstory is you guys have meant a lot to Rebecca and I in our own journey, our own conversations that we've had with each of you privately under the cloak of privacy and counseling. And then we've been able to come together, Rebecca and I, and process the wisdom that we get from each of you. And so it's just It's always fun to introduce you to this audience of people who really care about this conversation on how do we live in a healthy way? How do we live on purpose, but from a place of strength where we know who we are and we're working through all of these past histories? And I know for each of you, you're in this work because you kind of had to walk through some things early in your life that inspired you to do this. Will you just give us a little insight and background on why you do the kind of work you do?
Oh, wow. That's a hard question and would take me days to answer all of that. But it comes from pain. My desire for people's freedom came from a painful story in my own life where I didn't have the tools or the way out. And I had to go through a lot to find my way out. And I want people to be able to have opportunity to be able to find their freedom in a whole new way.
And I think for me also, I had the intentions for many years of doing everything right. But I knew that while I was trying to do that, underneath, there was this struggle that I kept going, why don't I feel like everything's okay? And I felt like such an imposter. And I felt like that maybe finally it would all come together. And the pain that I think I was trying to avoid finally led me into making some real crisis mistakes, or at least crisis decisions in my life that unbelievably, I can't still figure out how it works this way, but out of that came my real understanding for who I was and a lot of healing that I needed so desperately, but I couldn't find before.
The goal of our conversation today, and I hope people hear this, is, I mean, Rebecca and I still get counseling. You guys have been an encouragement to us to continue pushing deep, and that this isn't a discouragement to anybody that, hey, no matter how old you are, no matter how much you've learned, read, experienced, having space to kind of keep processing, to keep healing, to keep growing seems to be a lifelong journey. Is that what you guys have experienced as well? I mean, now you're later into your season, you've helped a lot of people, but you still have your own journey of healing you're on.
You know, absolutely. You think you come to counseling, and I did. I started with an eating disorder at 12 and didn't know a name for it till I was 21, because I'm 60 years old now. But you come to counseling thinking you're working on the big things. But even now, there are things that I want to continue to grow deeper in. It's a journey that I find every time I step into my pain, I find freedom. And I want to live in freedom. I want to live in peace, and I want to live in contentment, and I want to live in joy. And the first half of my life, I did not know what joy was. I could not find joy. I would see everybody else would have joy, and I couldn't understand what was missing for me to keep me from that joy.
Lori, we've been meeting about 3 years, and I remember not long into our time, you shared with me about having an eating disorder in your teens, and all of a sudden I felt understood. Not that my issue was eating disorders, but I understood. I thought, okay, someone who's coming with counsel has actually walked the road of recovery or overcoming something hard. Mine looked more like panic disorder that kind of manifested in claustrophobia. But I think it was helpful to just hear that, because so often we kind of feel like we're the only one who struggles. Everyone else is trying to fix us. We're the one that constantly need fixed. And that day, it was just a comfort to go, okay, she's had to walk this in her youth and even in her 20s. And just hearing that even from you as a maternal role in my life, or someone who's older and wiser and is sharing those things. I want to talk about eating disorders for a minute while we're here, just because I'm sure that there are people listening who are struggling with this. How did you know, and at what age did you know something was disordered about food for you?
Well, at 21, I was looking at a paper because I was desperate for my eating disorder was bulimia. And I was desperately looking for what am I doing and why am I doing it? I would tell my parents back in the day, and they didn't know. They would just say, just stop doing it. And I couldn't stop doing it. My brain was set in an obsessive compulsive disordered thinking. And it was also, my eating disorder later I learned was just a symptom of covering the traumas of my childhood, which went back into some sexual abuse and some attachment issues, that the eating disorder was just my way of survival. Mm. It was my way of trying to find a way to comfort myself, to control the world, which we know that's an illusion, and to be able to avoid the pain of facing some real childhood issues.
And so as you started to discover, why do I do this? Is that when you started to understand a way out or get the help you needed?
It was a long road because I could stop the eating disorder, but then codependency came in. I'm just going to drop this bomb. My love addict came in. And all of this ended in ways of what I would say I was living on the victim, rescuer, persecutor triangle, which I call drama trauma, which is the fear part of the brain, the lower downstairs part of the brain, the limbic system, which is the fight, flight, freeze, all survival in a marriage to someone who is also living there, which tragically ended up in a divorce because we didn't know what we were doing.
Hmm. Well, I think, you know, as you mentioned, just the journey you were on, even with food, I think about how many people we have those conversations with. I know this is a conversation Bill and I have about my need for food sometimes as a comfort, and one of the things you said to me recently, Bill, is, do you ever feel like when you're eating at your problem, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just been hard for me to identify why I do it, when I do it. I've done these practices to try to stop in the middle and go, what am I feeling right now? That's been so helpful. But when you talk through this conversation with most people dealing with food addictions or bulimia or anorexia or comfort eating, what's really going on behind all that?
Well, I would not consider myself an expert in eating disorders, but like many of the addictions, there is this pain that's going on. But oftentimes what happens with, as Laurie was talking about bulimia, there is a sense of when I take in nourishment, when I take in something, I don't deserve that. I don't deserve to have anything good. And the only control oftentimes in an eating disorder a person feels is when, for some of them, is when I'm not eating. I've at least got control then, and if I'm losing weight. And so to take in means there's a moment of, oh, this is what I want. And then the moment it's in, it's like, oh, I can't keep this. And if you think about that, for those people that cannot relate to eating disorder, but how many times have you also experienced when you really wanted attention or you wanted something, you wanted focus on you, and then the moment you got it, it was like, oh my gosh, I don't want this, you know, I don't want it on me now. And the very thing I'm longing for doesn't feel like a fit, or it feels too much. And I think one of our pains that we struggle with in life is that, why is it that I'm longing for something, and the moment it feels almost as if I get that, it feels too much, or it feels wrong, or it doesn't feel like it fits. And I think that's what brings a lot of hopelessness, is that we go, oh, well, I thought this was going to fill this void, but then when I do, I find myself running from it, or it doesn't feel good, and so now what am I going to do?
So you wind up trying everything under the sun.
Yes.
And nothing's working. And then I think for a lot of us, the older you get, you realize, well, I thought this would do it, and then I pursued that. And then this would do it, and I pursued that, and this and this and this. Despair sets in, I think, when you're like, I've actually had the options of trying everything. Nothing satisfies. And I hadn't thought about it from that angle of, I can't actually receive the good. What is the lie behind that? Is it I'm unworthy of that?
I think it goes so deep. Yes, part of it is I'm unworthy of that, but part of it goes, I think, much deeper to a literally a body sense of something about this doesn't feel deserving, and therefore I don't even like the feeling.
Hmm. I think the foundation for me was, I call it love hunger. I was starving for love. Somebody please see me, hear me, approve of me, and love me for who I am.
Yeah, I think that's obviously for each of us this deep longing that in our own spiritual journey, you know, we've learned that the only way you experience that depth of love is from our Heavenly Father. Not everybody believes that or understands that, but that's what we're maybe ultimately longing for, and we have to bring Him into this process. I want to hear more about how you guys think about that, because I know it's such a foundation to true healing. But before we do that, we are excited to introduce you to one of our new sponsors, Pine Cove Camps. If you're looking for a place where your child can kind of unplug, and a lot of the things we talk about on here, right, Rebecca? Get away from the electronics, detox. Summer camp is an incredible option.
Right. It's Rhythms for Life for kids. That's what we are passionate about. Get off your phones, get out in nature, get those serotonin levels raising, and come home really happy.
Anytime we send our children away to camp, I mean, it's amazing. We've done 1 week camps, 2 week camps, and they come back and we're like, this is a different kid.
I know.
What happened? And then you realize, oh, they didn't have their phone. Right. They were in community with other people. They were getting godly discipleship on a daily basis. They were with their friends. They were playing. They were exercising. They were eating good. You know, all those things just make summer camp awesome.
All that movement in their bodies and getting outside, making new friends. Everyone has camp friends, and then they get on a group text and come home and keep up that conversation. But we both grew up going to camps. Gabe and I, we made sure our kids did the same, because it is this transformative time. And Pine Cove has some amazing features.
Yeah, Pine Cove offers youth camps, family camps, day camps.
They offer zip lines, horseback riding, water blobs, but they're also invested in making sure that you get mentored with these college kids that are leading and guiding you and talking to you about God.
I mean, let's be honest, as parents, we need the extra support, and to give your children that opportunity to go intense for a week, overnight camp with friends, and better understanding their relationship with God is such a gift. So I want you to check out their website for locations, and we have a special offer. If you go to pinecove.com now and use the code RHYTHMS250, you're going to get $250 off a first-time overnight youth camp registration. So make this the summer your child will remember forever at Pine Cove Camps. Trauma seems to be something that comes up in our conversations a lot, and the role that that plays. And some people know what that trauma was. A lot of people have no idea, maybe, of something that happened earlier in their life or some experience that they had that is feeding into this. How important is it to remember? How important is it to discover kind of some of these past historical ways in which maybe your body's been affected, your mind, your emotions, your relationships?
Yeah, very important. I was going to say, part of that imposter syndrome for me was a sense of I was very involved in church. I was very involved in people's lives. I was even a part of a small group. And I was doing everything I could to know how to try to bring meaning. But as Laurie said earlier, the sense of connection. And yet when I connected again, I knew that I wasn't really letting anybody in all the way in, because I had the sense of shame. I grew up really early on, even though our family was a very loving family, I grew up somehow getting really afraid of things when I think my mom would get mad and get upset. But as a child, I really responded from a real fear place. And so for me, growing up with looking around me going, how do I get people to be okay so nobody's going to blow their top? And so it became about trying to make my circumstances around me be okay. But really, it was growing up with a sense of trauma in my brain, in that fight, flight, or freeze place. And so what I would often do is was trying to just make the circumstances, make people be okay around me, which I think probably felt pretty good for them, that it felt like I was being attentive and caring, without, I think, hardly anyone knowing that inside there was this fear, there was this anxiety that was going on. And I kept trying to find ways to make it go away and to make my sense of being filled up more and more and more, when really it caused me to also have a sense of, I guess you could call it this love addiction, this desire to connect and connect. And then I would feel really guilty about how emotionally I was drawing close to this someone else and kind of break that off. And then years would go by and then the same thing would begin to happen again, not understanding why am I in this stuck routine. Mm. And I know that there are people out there who similarly may go, I have these beliefs, I have values, why do I seem to not be able to really fulfill these values and live to those? And I'm wondering, what is wrong with me? And I think that's where trauma can lay down this pathway that we don't understand why I keep finding myself going towards survival instead of what it is I really want to live for.
And I think getting into how do you discover what those traumas were? I mean, I know there's new ways of doing that. I don't know how new they are, but like EMDR, there's like some really specific strategies counselors use to help people discover. But I think for a lot of people, they're stuck. Like they're trying to remember something. They can't remember it. Maybe they have just a glimpse and they're questioning, did that really happen? Am I making that up? How do you help counsel people through that process? How do you help them go back in time? And is that a way of reliving the trauma? Can that also be damaging?
Yes. If I would take a client to relive their trauma, that would be damaging. But if we're curious and we're going to shine the light on what happened, most people are coming in thinking that something big happened to them. And they're just going, I don't know why I'm doing the things I'm doing and something must have happened to me. And I'm going, well, not necessarily. Because we are in a fallen world and parents are always going to give too much or not enough. They're not going to be perfect. And a child's perception of their parents, if you ask my brothers, they would say, oh, we were in a great family. Everything was wonderful. But my perception was different than theirs. And so my parents love me. They love me deeply. But I had a perception of not enough. And I was starving for more. And I believe part of that's my personality. I'm a deep thinker. I am an emotionally deep person. And my mother is a math major. So I was starving for more. That wasn't in her personality to give to me. And so when I'm looking at trauma, I'm looking at perceptions. I'm looking at everyday events, not necessarily the big T events. Now, the big T events, if someone's just coming in with that, that's an easier trauma for me to help heal. But it's the little chronic, what we call little T traumas, that are the harder lies that are coming in that people are living under, believing that that's the way they ought to live.
I remember you guys, my first introduction to you, you were sharing at a retreat we were both at. Mm-hmm. And you said something, and I didn't know it was you at the time. I just remember you talking, and you said anything beyond the bounds of nurture is chronic trauma. And that basically means anything that's either too much or not enough, which of course we all have grown up with some version of that. And I remember just welling up in tears and trying to fight it back. And I didn't know who you were. And it was later that someone gave me your name for counseling. And I walked in, I'm like, you're the one who said that. God knew. But it was so interesting because there's so much. There's the beyond the bounds of nurture in adolescence. So you're the recipient. And then there's how that comes out when you become the adult and you have children, then what are you doing that's beyond the bounds of nurture, that's too much or not enough? Partly because you didn't fully recover or walk through that recovery journey as a child. How does that then play out when you become an adult and you have children?
Oh, yeah, there's that.
We're still learning that now that we have teens.
Well, I was going to say, how many people have we had that experience of going back to an old childhood playground? I remember the elementary school I went to, Woodmont School, was a public school in Nashville, and it's now just a park. And I've gone back to that, and I've had that experience of when the first time I went back, and I was like, I thought that slide was taller,
right?
Or I thought the yard was bigger. And we look at that, and we go, oh, my goodness. And I think that same thing happens when we go to revisit the pains of our life. We start to step in, and we go, I thought this was going to be so much more dangerous and so much more scary. Now, it doesn't mean that it's not scary, and that's why we oftentimes avoid it. But sometimes when we move into there, as Laurie's talking about, it's not always that the big thing happened, the bear chased me in the woods, but instead it may be those smaller things that go, it felt so frightening to think about stepping into feeling those, and yet when I do that, I can begin to really heal as I move through. But when I don't try to help step into and move through, then yes, I'm going to pass that along to my kids. I'm going to pass that on in all of my relationships, and still not understanding, wow, why is it that I keep repeating some of these same things? And my kids are going to grow up receiving some of those gifts as well. And that was one of the motivators for me, is when my kids were still pretty young, I thought, this is an inheritance I don't want them to receive. And I became really committed at my own recovery because I wanted them to be able to receive something different.
So there's this real tension when we talk about going backwards, going into the trauma, where in our culture today even, it can feel like a justification for a perspective of victimhood versus going there to then overcome. And how do you deal with that tension of helping people not just sit in that place as an excuse or a reason to not move forward in their life, but actually empower them and help them start to see how that pain can become purpose?
There is, I hope this is okay to say on here, but there is a song by Miranda Lambert, The House That Built Me.
And I love that song.
And to me, that's a part of this feel is I'm not going back to live there. I just want to go visit. And it's not even that I want to go visit necessarily all the time, but I need to go visit so that I can find a sense of what really happened so that I can understand why am I feeling the way I'm feeling so that I can then realize, what am I doing with that? How am I walling up my heart, as Brené Brown might say, or how am I putting the shields up and defending myself rather than letting someone know me? And for me, my heart rate goes up a little bit, just as Laurie and I talk about some of the wounds of our past, because there's a part of me going, I don't want anybody to know, you know, I don't want to go there. And yet when we do and have conversations with people, there's always a revival of energy in the room where people go, oh my goodness, me too. And you can find that we don't really connect often on the strengths and the blue ribbons that we won, but we usually connect on the, oh yeah, I had that pain too.
Yeah, I'm in totally agreement with that. I just know it's complicated. You mentioned EMDR. You mentioned, you know, tools of and ways of being able to come out of trauma. And when I made up a word, it's called victim mythology, because I tell people I had a PhD in it. I knew how to be a victim, but I didn't know how not to be a victim. And you don't know what you don't know. And so part of our role as counselors is to help people get off being a victim, moving on into being the adult self that they were created to be able to love their me's, to be able to fully embrace being a human being and not a human doing. And so we'll use tools like EMDR, brain spotting, or parts work to help the person have an understanding of what's driving the bus. What fear is that they put into place that they feel is normal, that's not normal, to help them learn how to move off of that onto free living, embracing the person that they were created to be and loving that person within themselves.
This episode is brought to you by Samaritan Ministries, and we love Samaritan Ministries because it's a healthcare provider that actually gives the choice to you, and that's what we all want, right? You want the choice to choose what's best for your family, for your kids, for where you live, for what you need in the moments that you need it. What's unique about this ministry, though, and this is what Rebecca and I have been a part of for years, it's a healthcare sharing ministry where you actually share the needs of other people. And so it's not like typical insurance. It's a different model, but it's a model that I know we found over the last decade has worked so beautifully for our family. And not only do you provide for other members that are part of this entire collective, but they provide for you. And so this direct connection between Samaritan members is one of the many joys of being part of this community. So discover how you can make the choice that's right for your family by going to SamaritanMinistries.org/RFL podcast.
So I'm sure somebody listening right now is like, well, I wish I lived in Franklin and I could go visit one of them for counseling. But so many of our listeners will not have that opportunity to sit with you. But I know they want to walk the road of remembering into recovery. So just some tangible steps. So from what I'm understanding is remembering in the appropriate way knowing how to respond from those things that the house that built you does lead to recovery. Like the goal is that you go back, you regain a sense of self and in an overcoming kind of way or a confidence, and then you now walk in recovery. So what are just some practical tips you might give someone who says, I'm self-aware enough to kind of know my habits. I know my chronic habits when they creep back in. I can identify those things. Like for me, it's consumption has never been food, but sometimes I'll like scroll realtor.com as if I'm going to run away somewhere to some remote city with my family who does not want to move again. But whatever those things are, and usually there are compulsion that surface when something is not at rest.
Yeah.
So what would you tell someone who's just like, I'm starting to identify the things that are showing me that there's unhealth here. How can those remembering lead to recovery?
Oh, that's a really good question. Because we want to make this real, because you're right. We don't always get to just enter into deep therapy. I did want to say that where I think I learned some of that, I did some of my work years ago, and we can talk about this more in a minute, but at OnSite in Middle Tennessee, and then have worked there as clinical director for the last 10 years. And one of the things that I see over and over again are people who are scared to go, I don't want to open up the past. I don't want to look into that. And again, we'll say it's not so that you can stay stuck there. It's so that we can move forward. And so some of those things, once I'm feeling that pain, is for one person, it may be, I want to go get two bowls of ice cream every night before I go to bed when I start to feel, or I may want to, you know, whatever it is that I use as a medicator. So one of the things, a practical step, is to look at, wait a minute, what is it that I'm feeling right now? What's the emotion? What's going on in my gut or in my head or in my chest? And if I can become aware of the emotion or of the feeling, then I can usually find, oh, that's what's driving this thing right now. And literally, one thought can be, if I can find the emotion and maybe write a few sentences, just a few sentences about what it is I'm feeling, oftentimes the desire to do the thing, the medicating behavior, oftentimes that will really begin to decrease, begins to go down. And then also even some more writing about what is it that I do? What is it that is my cycle of getting stuck in? And sometimes even literally, I know it sounds a little crazy, but literally writing almost as if it had its own voice, to write from that thing, what is it that it's trying to do to help me? What is it actually its goal? And oftentimes I'll begin to see that I'll begin to realize that that part of me is trying to do something to keep me from not feeling something painful.
Right.
And then I can kind of come back to, but what is it that I'm feeling? What's that about? And I can find it gives me a groundedness. Mm-hmm. Now, for a while, I may realize, oh, wow, I'm also feeling a lot of pain or a lot of grief. A friend of mine, Chip Dodd, who says, I think one of the ways of living well is that we learn to grieve well.
Yeah.
And in doing so, I find this sense of groundedness so that then I find, well, I don't really need the two bowls of ice cream as much anymore.
Well, I think of when I was able to name, you know, this compulsion to run or escape, you know, which was rooted in claustrophobia, but then it just turns into like apathy or boredom. If I'm not creating, there's a tendency for me to kind of just need something exciting. There's a little bit something that I need to look forward to. My bestie called me an adrenaline junkie, you know, about a decade ago. And I was like, I don't really know what that's about, but it is always like something new. And so one word that I've been wrestling with in my journal, even again, I just launched a book a few months ago. And then when that starts to subside, I'm like, okay, what are we doing now? What's next? It's not even always work. It's just, I need to go. I like almost need the physical movement of doing something. And so one of the words that I keep hearing in my journal as I process this on paper, so that's what I want you readers to hear. A lot of this is you having to process it on paper. And so many of you would say, well, I'm not a journaler. I don't like to journal. Like, this isn't about you keeping, you know, writing down what you ate yesterday. This is you actually thinking through what your mind is thinking, your heart is feeling, and getting it out so that you can make sense of it. Because so often these thoughts just stay trapped in our heads, and so they just continue to loop. So the word for me has been settled, because Gabe keeps saying how much he wants to settle in Franklin forever. And when he does that, I want to poke my eyes out. So, because I was like, the more you say you want to settle locally, I'm like, oh, let's travel the world. So the point is, it's like, why am I not settled in my skin? Am I not wanting to be settled in a place where I'm known? Maybe the fear is like, if people know me fully, they won't like me. Mm-hmm. But it's this deep-rooted need that I think a lot of us have to name. We have to name it so that we can start to just work that out with God. Because then while I'm getting this word settled, I'm constantly reading these passages in scripture early in the morning about you hem me in behind and before you have laid your hand upon me. There is a boundary and a constraint that actually provides freedom. It provides wholeness and healing, but it also requires constraint. And the rhythms that I've written about require constraint. It's like a habit and a pattern and a rhythm that's going to come back around whether or not you want it to. So all those things are God inviting us into naming those pains and walking us through it. And so I just wanted to get vulnerable for a minute, because I think we don't want to just talk around something. I want you guys to know that all of us are on a journey toward healing. And it's very important that each of us take agency and responsibility to be able to name the thing that keeps trying to hold us back or medicate us and make us numb out.
Yeah, and I'll just add to that. Thank you for sharing all that. I know that's what's actually normal for you to be okay, kind of revealing what you're feeling.
Chronic oversharer.
More than I am. But I think too, Bill, we've been working through this exercise for me as to what am I feeling when certain episodes happen where I want to eat more than I should, because that tends to be the place I go. And, you know, it was great for me a couple weekends ago. Rebecca was out of town. I was watching the kids, and I felt that desire to like overeat, and I stopped and was like, "What am I? Why would I feel that right now?" And it came to me that I was feeling lonely, that I had this sense that, as Rebecca said, there's a lot of thoughts that run around in my head all the time from the things I'm reading, the things I'm working on. Sometimes don't feel like I have as many people as I wish I could to share those deepest thoughts with. Rebecca becomes the one person that I can. So maybe when she's not around, I'm feeling lonely. I don't have anybody to talk to. And I'm not even sure my thoughts are worthy of somebody else taking time to dissect them with me and help me think through it. So I would just say to this whole exercise of stopping, pausing, trying to take account of what is going on, writing it down, what that did for Rebecca and I, she returns Sunday and we get to have a conversation about it. You know, I get to allow her to kind of enter into that with me and help me process that feeling that otherwise I just would have skipped over. I'd have gone and played golf. I would have distracted myself and never stopped.
It's interesting. The word that we long for in those times often is in connection, which is one of your rhythms that you've written about. We're looking for comfort. We often say that's what I'm looking for in a lot of these medicators. But interestingly, I did a little bit of a word study. That comfort, the second part of that is from fortis or forte, which is about strength or a fort, being in a strong place. And yet the calm part is with. So really the person who is most comforting to us is not the person that comes and just says the nice things that we want to hear. It's actually a person who will come alongside with us, but they do so in their strength, meaning they are in their authenticity, they're being real. And so that's why I believe we really long for the person who's willing to go there, to drop into their heart and to say, you know what, me too. I feel lonely too. I may come across in the friendliness and be able to speak, but there are times I feel really lonely and I'm not even sure what for. And then when I can find and hear someone else that goes, ugh, me too, there is that sharing of oh, that's how I feel comforted. And I believe that's what we long for in each other, is to know, is someone else going to come alongside of me?
And I think of the word, as Rebecca was talking, of the word rest. resting in the goodness of God. It took me such a long time to realize that God was good, but to rest that we are sons and daughters of the Most High King, and that we can rest, our minds can rest, that we are being held, that we are being delighted in, that He is loving us far greater than we could ever imagine, that He thinks of us more times than the sands of the sea. It's an incredible place of recognizing that God is so good and our minds and our bodies can rest. There's a big word out right now that everybody talks about. It's mindfulness. Well, mindfulness is just presence. It's noticing, it's seeing, it's hearing, it's feeling, it's touching, it's smelling. It's slowing our world down to be able to just be in the world, but be content, competent in who we are and whose we are.
Now, you both talk a lot about being human beings, not human doings. Yeah. But in conclusion, I mean, would you share just the role that God plays in this with us, that healing, that this is such a dynamic part, I know, of how you both ultimately want to help people approach this, yeah, is to go beyond just their own looking at themselves in the mirror, self-diagnosing, and then trying to self-heal, but that there's a greater power that actually enters into this healing with us. Describe how that works.
Yeah, this is so meaningful to us. I think for a lot of years, I got taught about God. I went to Sunday school. I did all the things. And again, I kept thinking there was going to be this magical moment when it all fell into place, until I realized that the magical moment was all of my life in my search. That's where you never all falls into place. But as Laurie was just talking about mindfulness, and then the word remember is about coming to mindfulness over and over and over again and remembering. And I remember for me, it is then finding, oh yeah, God was good here. God was good in this other place, and God was good here, and God is good. As I began to realize that there is this God that really and truly is good, that is so good that there is this whole thing, there's this whole passage in the Bible, in the New Testament, where Jesus, even when he's here and he's talking over and over about all these places where he has compassion, and then he says to the people that are following, and it's even going to be better when I leave so that I can send the Holy Spirit. I can send the one that comes alongside you to comfort you and to be with you. And there is where I find that we have the most importance in this work, is it's not talking about God in a just a, oh, well, here's some rules to follow, because rules don't do much. I always say shame is only a good motivator for 48 hours. And after that, there's no good in that. And it's really being what motivates me, what draws me into the kindness of God, the compassion of God, the one who loves. I've said those people that may be hearing this that have never had a loving mother or a father, never had a parent who really loved them in a way, and yet somehow they still know what love looks like when they have children.
Right.
Where does that come from? And it comes from this heart that God has created in us to say, this is who I really am. Run after this. Run after the desire for love and compassion and longing. And that takes us actually to Jesus, which I think is one of the most surprises for a lot of people, that is truly where the heart of God is. It's in the center of love and acting with love towards those people around us, towards our partners, our spouses, our children. But what does love really look like, rather than something that's just about my self-centeredness or creating something that I want that's going to actually just fulfill me? It's interesting that if I want to have fulfillment, I don't just hoard everything I get, but I actually give away of my time and my resources. And so finding that actually listening to God, to the Holy Spirit, teach me how to love well is what I love helping us to do.
I love that. When I think about that, I love how you just ended this when you said, even if you didn't have a loving parent in the way that you needed it or thought that should look like, The imago Dei of God is still in you that gives you that love to want to give to someone else. Regardless of whatever circumstances have come against you, the Holy Spirit empowers us to go back out. And I just hope that that encourages someone today that we don't have to stay in our victimhood, as Lori said, that we actually carry light shining in our hearts. I'm so encouraged by that in Corinthians. We are these fragile clay jars. We're pressed, but we're not crushed. And no matter all the things that have taken us out, I say this quote often, that the measure of trial you've endured directly relates to the measure of hope you offer the world. It almost just becomes a refining fire, a pruning for good, everything good from God to flow through you. And so as you listen to this, many of you will probably listen a couple times because you heard something you want to go back to, but just be encouraged that when you feel that place of pain or compulsion, to name it, and get people around you who know you well, who love you, even if you don't have counseling currently in your life, there are people who actually love you and want to help you walk through these things. Bill and Lori, thank you so much for being with us. We love you guys.
We are so grateful to be here, and we are so grateful for y'all's ministry to so many people. Yeah. And how you pour out the truth and you pour out yourselves, and you live in such a consistent way. It's such an encouragement to see you both.
Yeah, we really enjoy getting to know you more in your heart.
Well, I feel like we just had another therapy session. I mean, as always, kind of getting into the deep weeds with them. And I hope for some of you, it just helped you see that there's a power in processing some of the stuff that we sometimes shove down and don't deal with. But when we expose it, we get freedom.
Both of them have such a nurturing presence, which I think is so important in counseling, that you are able to go there. It's safe. It's trusted. And that's partly why counseling works for so many of us, right? We need to have someone who's not coming with some baggage, who's ready to kind of use our words against us. They're able to just listen, ask the right questions, help us self-discover. And that's, I hope, what today did for you as well.
Yeah, there's something about seasoned people who've lived a lot of life and had a lot of therapy. That's what I love about Bill and Lori. And so if you enjoyed this and it kind of unlocked some things, just a reminder, if you're interested in joining Rebecca and I September 10th through 13th in Colorado, we're going to have more details coming out of that in a couple of weeks. Bill and Lori will be with us, Pete Richardson, other people that are going to be coming in as we really work through how to rest, restore, connect, create in our daily life. And you can fill out the interest form at RebeccaLyons.com/retreat.